Welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast. Indeed, it is Quality Hang. I am Rod Brooks, and as always, I am joined on this podcasting adventure by the homie, my homie, Mr. Marcus Osborne. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's good? I'm just trying to get my kink on, man.
Aren't we all?
Trying to get my kink on.
At the end of the day, that's what we're all real trying talk. To do.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. And you don't, obviously, you don't have to give the all of it away. But have you discovered that you have new kinks once you got to be middle age? Did something change, or the same shit is just the same shit that you were always into?
Hey, man, my mama listened to this podcast. I can't be doing that right now. I can't be doing
mine too. Mine too.
I can't be. No, I can't. I mean, your question is a legitimate one, but no, man, my mama's be listening to this. I can't be doing that, man. So, no.
I don't need to know what it is. I just need to know if it's changed. Have your tastes changed as you've gotten to be a more seasoned man?
I mean, well, yes, I have gone through, put it this way. I have learned some things about myself and others. And some of these things I've learned about myself and others, I don't like, or I didn't know that I liked. So yes, because I like to consider myself a well-rounded, cultured, maybe even bougie individual. I mean, yeah. I've had some experiences in my adult life that have opened my eyes, and just my eyes, to different experiences. Just my eyes have been open. Nothing else. Absolutely nothing else. We are off.
Me and my boys, and I'm sure y'all probably did this too, is we would always play the game of how much money would it take you to do X, Y, Z. And back then, everybody, you know, the immediate answer would be, nah, you couldn't pay me enough to do that. You couldn't pay me enough to do that. Now I'm like, well, if somebody got the money right in front of me, stacked up, case, I could tell you right now, in answer to that question, what would I do XYZ for this amount of money? The answer is probably going to be no, but I'm not going to lie. If the money was right in front of me and you said, will you do this for this amount of money? I might be thinking about some stuff. I might be thinking about taking some chances.
One thing I believe to be absolutely true. Everybody got a price. Everybody got a price. So, and that's pretty self-explanatory. Everybody going to say no until you get to that certain dollar figure where they go, is anybody going to find out about this? Fine, I'll do it.
Brett Favre.
I mean, you knew exactly what I was. We'll get into that dirty, rotten motherfucker later. All right? Mm-hmm. We'll get in. I can't believe I rooted for that guy.
And oh, it's, my God. Yeah.
So we'll get to Brett Favre later in into the G segment. But let's go ahead and get it started. We have four things we get into off the rip: randomness, pop culture, and sports. But we always start with here on Quality Hang with lifestyle. What you got, Marcus?
Well, listen, man. Obviously, January 6th is still on everybody's mind, where a bunch of conspiracy theorists, lunatics, nut jobs, rednecks, and hillbillies, and just a weird group of people got together and decided, we don't like the way this country voted, so we're just going to overthrow the government.
I believe the word you're looking for is traitors to encompass all of them.
That is the word.
You had some who were hillbillies, that is the word. Who were conspiracy theorists, and they were other sort of subgenres. But to put all of those people who went to D.C. on January 6th for the purposes of stopping the peaceful transference of executive power in the United States of America, all of those people, the thousands of them, they're all traitors to the country and the government of the United States of America.
So the question is, and I've actually been thinking about this a lot lately, just on a deeper level, like if they had succeeded, what was going to happen? Like what did, I'm sure they hadn't thought this plan this far through. If you went through with this plan, exactly what did you think was going to happen once you got into Congress and you grabbed Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi and all these other people that you hated? What did you think was going to happen? That, like, all of a sudden you'd be in charge of the country? Like, what were you thinking was going to happen? It's insane that nobody, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but I would love to speak to a handful of these folks and just find out exactly what did you think was going to come of this time at the up at Congress, where you went in there and you got some people killed and you got in there and you overthrew the government and you got this room cleared out and now you control Congress. Now what? Like, what's your next step? I would have loved to have had that conversation.
I don't need to talk to any of these people. I don't want to talk to any of these people, and they don't want to talk to me. So cool. We've got that in common. I know exactly what they wanted and what they thought was going to happen. They wanted their dude, their people, their ideology to be in complete control and be the the overarching rule of this land, the United States, and its citizens. Me, you, and others. They wanted their ideology, their backwards retrograde ideology, they wanted it to be in charge. That's what they want.
Yeah.
And I mean,
how is that going to happen?
They thought it was going to happen by hook, by crook, and then eventually by force. So the more we learn about January 6th, and not just the storming of the Capitol, but the behind the scenes maneuvering by people like Jenny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, yeah. Supreme Court Justice, I hate to say, Clarence Thomas's wife, the scumbag senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, I believe is his name, and others, highly placed people in the United States government. They were pretty close to getting away with that shit, you know, with electors, state electors that were sympathetic to, again, their retrograde right-wing cause. So the combination of the back channel maneuvering and the storming of the Capitol, they thought that those two sort of actions were going to pull this thing off. So again, what they thought was going to happen, they thought they were going to be in charge. And they were quite all right with either doing it by, you know, political maneuvering the Jenny Thomas way, or by doing it by force, by storming and trying to take over the Capitol. And, you know, the way it surely seemed, either taking hostage or outright killing various members of government, two of them being Mike Pence and Nancy Pelosi.
And it's funny because as I get a chance to step back from all this stuff and take a grand look at everything involved here, I mean, what a fucking mess. Like, what a convoluted plan. Just literally had no chance of ever succeeding, even if they had gotten what they wanted. I mean, they weren't going to be in control of the military, and there's not a chance in hell that anybody in there was just going to sit by and just let Donald Trump be president of the United States. That's not how any of that works. This is a country where the power of the government, the power of the president, the power of all of those branches of the government, they come from the people. And if the people ain't standing for it, you could forget it. So you can go in there and you can run over as many Congress people as you want, as many senators, the vice president, anybody you want. The people, and the military especially, they're not going to sit around and let that happen.
Yeah. No, I didn't say
let that be a warning to you, up and coming fools.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, you know, the people who storm the Capitol, we're not talking about our best and our brightest, okay? It takes a special kind of idiot and a special group of idiots to do what they did. So their plan was really not going to succeed long term. even though, again, they were close to pulling it off. I feel like in my mind, what I find funny about the situation is, and this is no surprise to me, but the number of people who thought they were going to be seen as liberators, that what they were doing was seen as these are freedom fighters doing the right thing instead of what they are, which are a bunch of assholes who tried to take over the government. And now they are in the find out stage of fuck around and find out, where you have these people who are actually being sentenced to prison and federal prison, which I don't care if you in there for just 6 months, you don't want to be in the federal pen for no amount of time. It taint no joke. So I do love the fact that you had these people who went there and stormed the Capitol, and now they're like, well, I can't believe this is happening. Like, yes, this is called dealing with the consequences of your actions. And I find that to be hilarious.
Oh, my God. Yes.
What a bunch of morons. Let's move on to the world of sports. Week one of the NFL season in the books. Woo! My favorite team, my team, H-Town, baby, the Houston Texans, came out the gate with what? They tied. They tied 2020 to the Indianapolis Colts. It's not a loss. It's not a win. It's so very Texans.
Hey, dude, listen, don't be shocked if the Texans end up being far better than you expect them to be this year.
I will be shocked, Marcus. I'm sorry. I will be shocked.
First week stuff is obviously, it's just essentially a throwaway week. I mean, you can't really draw any conclusions from anything you see from the first week of anything. But I didn't have anything that I believed prior to the start of the season dispelled.
Sure.
I think this is about as wide open an NFL season as you have seen in decades. There's not one team where I went, that's a world beater right there. Not a single one. Not even Buffalo. Not KC. I just don't see any of these teams.
I mean,
being someone to worry about.
Week one, you could look drastically different in week 15, week 16, and that's mainly due in my mind to injuries because of the nature of the sport. I will say though, I did draw one conclusion from week one, and it is the play in week one from individual players and teams was quite uneven. Joe Burrow looked like a chump out there. He threw four interceptions. Matthew Stafford, who may or may not have an elbow injury of some sort, he looked out of sorts. You had defensive players who were out of sync, making mental mistakes. They were out of sort. And I think it has to do with the fact that we now in the NFL, and to me it's understandable because in preseason you don't want to subject your very important players, quarterbacks, wide receivers, defensive backs, rush defensive ends. You don't want to have them risk injury in a meaningless preseason game. I completely get that. But I think what you're losing in not having these guys play a little bit more in the preseason, you're losing these guys being as ready as they could be for the start of the regular season. And like I said, I think it affected certain individual players, and I think it affected teams. I think it affected the Niners. And there was a lot going on in the Niners' loss to Chicago. It was the weather. But I think the mistakes the Niners made and the way and how, you know, Trey Lance wasn't necessarily in sync. And again, I understand it was raining, but he wasn't in sync with Brandon Ayuk. He wasn't in sync with Deebo Samuel. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that they haven't played a lot of football together. So while I understand the value in not having your stars play in the preseason and possibly expose them to injury, I think the downside to that, and now this is 2 years in a row where you've had only three preseason games. You're talking about maybe 5 to 8 years where you've had quarterbacks and other high-profile players not play a lot or play at all during the preseason. I think the flip side of not exposing them to injury and meaningless money-grab preseason games is these dudes just aren't ready to face live ammunition, he tried to say, in week one of the NFL. And let me tell you something, man. them bullets be flying week one of the NFL. I think that's, and we might even see it here in week two, but it is definitely a thing in week one of the season.
Yeah, one of the things that I used to really like about the preseason, what was it, six games that it used to be at one point? Five or six games that it used to be at one
point? Six games way back in the day. It was four for about 30, 35 years, and then it went to three. This is the second season now of the three preseason games.
Because they've added that extra game, right? I agree that you maybe don't want to have your guys out there a lot during the preseason, but one of the things that I used to like about the preseason is that I would feel like I at least have a gauge on some of the things that I would see teams do. And I always felt like I got a good kick. Like the outcomes of the games was and is always meaningless, but at least you got a chance to see, you know, what a team's going to try, some outline of what teams are going to try to do, and maybe see where some players are, and maybe see, you know, how strong the defensive unit may be or how strong the offensive unit may be.
And that third preseason game is the one that showed you. When they had four, the third preseason game is where the starters on offense and defense would play at least the first half. Sometimes, depending on the team, depending on the coach, whatever, they would play into the third quarter. That third preseason game was, in essence, the dress rehearsal for week one of the NFL season. That has been eliminated completely with this now three preseason game schedule.
And here's the point, is that what's the point of having preseason games, really, other than making money, if you don't have some of your starters out there for at least 20% of the games being played? There's no point in having all these jokers out there playing who aren't going to sniff time during the season. Mm-hmm. You're wasting people's time and money by doing that shit. Just put the starters out there. Just go, even if you don't play the entire, maybe you may not play two or three games, but get them in there for at least a half so you can see something, so they can at least get that timing together. Yep. Because once the season starts, you can't afford to be throwing games away simply because you haven't had time together anymore. Like, those days are you can't do that. Every single game of the NFL season means something.
Yeah. I think Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, even though he doesn't have Devontae Adams, I think his inability to sync up with his new wide receivers, I think that was a problem. Rodgers didn't play during the preseason. There are other examples. So I believe every team really was affected by how they are going to playing guys in the preseason. Although in the case of the Cowboys, who completely and totally shit the bed on Sunday football, scoring only 3 points, the Cowboys were the only team in the league to not score a touchdown. It had nothing to do with the preseason. It just had everything to do with the fact that the Dallas Cowboys flat out suck. And that was especially
for
my brother. So suck on that.
I actually don't believe that Dak Prescott is going to come back in the next 3 weeks. I don't believe that for a minute.
No. What, because Jerry Jones said so? Oh, you think so?
I don't believe that for a minute.
Really? You think so, Dr. Jones? Shut up. Shut up, old man.
And by the way, if Dak Prescott does come back in the next 3 weeks and he doesn't get the surgery that he probably should have, he's fucking around with his own career.
He's
like, don't play this game.
No, he's not coming back.
It's insane.
We here at Quality Hang Enterprises, we're not just about football. We love football, but we're a cultured outfit. And when it comes to the world of sports, we don't just talk about stick and ball sports. We talk about the thinking man's sport, and of course, that is chess. Well, Marcus, there has been a massive scandal in the world of chess, where last week, world chess champion Magnus Carlsen, you know, the big Magnus, they call him, he had to withdraw from the major tournament after he unexpectedly lost to underdog Hans Niemann, or as he is known in the chess world, Big Hans. I don't know. Carlsen withdrew because there's speculation that Carlsen, even though he lost, he cheated in this big chess tournament. Now, how does one cheat in chess? Well, there's a newfangled way.
That was my question.
Using technology. And what the chess world is saying is that there's a big chance that Magnus Carlsen used technology to cheat. What type of technology?
A la Houston Astros?
You know what? It's even more, let's say, internal than that. The chess world is saying that he probably used vibrating anal beads. Now, how would one do that? I'm glad you asked. Chess fans are speculating that anal beads could transmit messages from an accomplice who was watching the chess match being broadcast live online and consulting with artificial intelligence, more than likely a computer, to transmit the perfect move. So, yes, Marcus, it is similar to the Houston Astros Major League Baseball cheating scandal, where they used technology, which was basically a replay video feed, to watch the catcher give signals. And then they would go from using technology to just using old school force by then banging on a trash can a certain amount of times to indicate a certain pitch. So technology was used, but then again, they just kind of went old school, you know, just again, brutality, beating on the trash can. This chess thing where one is using anal beads to help transmit the move, I would dare say it is ingenious. I would also say this for me personally, I'm a competitive person. I'm not that competitive to where I'm going to jam something in the outdoor to give myself a competitive advantage. I think too highly of my abilities normally to go down that dirt road, if you will, to have to use anal beads to help me win the competition. So this has not yet been proven. The chess world is still reeling and trying to figure this out. When we get more information, we, of course, will pass it along to you. So there you go.
Allow me to circle back. Did we have a conversation about everybody got a price? Now, I am not into the booty play. However, if I'm in a chess match and there's a certain number, dollar amount on the line, and somebody says, Marcus, you got to use these booty beads and you might win this $10 million purse. Something might be going in, man.
Okay, so.
Something might be going. And Rod, let me back it up with another thing we talked about. I may discover a new kink as well. Two things, baby. Two things.
It's all coming together. Oh, you see what I did there once again. So, Magnus Carlsen, the man who inserted the anal beads to gain an advantage in this chess tournament, he withdrew and had to give up $350,000 in prize money. So, okay, let's just break it down to its very last compound.
Okay.
Would you, Marcus Osborne, shove some anal beads up there to possibly win $350,000? Or is your price higher?
Oh, boy. Is this the finals? This is the final match?
Yeah, man, this is it. This is for all the
final match. God damn. If this was somebody who I felt like I needed an extra boost to beat and I couldn't do it on my own, I can't say no, Rod. I can't say no. 350 cash. I can't say no.
And listen, again, I'm not here to shame anybody. But like I said earlier, man, my moms be listening to this. I can't let my moms know that I'll jam some anal beads up my butt for $350,000. I can't let them know my price is not as high as it could be. $350 million? Is it tax free?
Oh.
Is it all cash? Is it unmarked bills? All right, we can have a discussion. All right, we'll get my agent involved. But I can't have my mom's thinking that just for $350,000 you can go ahead and, you know, start cracking beads in there. No.
$350 million, I'm considering. $350 million, there is not a second thought. Beads going in, buddy. They going in.
All right. Let's get to the world of pop culture. Here's something that's been grinding my gears here. In the world of international film festivals, there's something going on here, and I find it to be odd. Multi-minute standing ovations. Now you've done something, or you've been somewhere where you've seen something that's been so outstanding where you felt compelled to stand up and clap, and then you did it, and other people stood up because you did it, or you stood up because other people did it. But we've all on some level been involved in a standing ovation. What's the longest you think you've stood up and applauded for a virtuoso performance?
Oh man, you got about 30 seconds with me.
That's all you're going to get, man. I can't clap for that long.
30 seconds. Okay?
I cannot. My hands start to hurt. I can't clap for that long. I've seen some great stuff.
The fact that I'm standing up is already enough.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a problem. But you're going to get a good 30 seconds. A minute, I'll stand up and maybe stomp my feet a couple of times. But after that, I'm not clapping.
Yeah.
Well, at the Venice Film Festival, there was a 4-minute standing ovation for some movie called Don't Worry, Darling. 4 minutes. 4 minutes of people standing up clapping for some art house movie. Let me tell you something. I saw the Avengers movies. I thought they were great. Never once did I think, I'm going to stand up and clap for 4 minutes. You also have another movie, The Whale, starring Brendan Fraser. That got a 6-minute standing ovation.
Yes.
6 minutes of people in tuxedos and tight patent leather shoes standing up clapping for a movie. Yeah. There is a another Marilyn Monroe movie, like we needed or asked for another one, called Blonde. That got an 11-minute standing ovation. 11-minute. Now, this movie is NC-17, which is the old rated X rating, which is the new, I should say, rated X rating. So maybe, just maybe, it's got so much nastiness and nudity in it, everybody's just like, oh, well, we gotta give it up. Still though, that's 11 minutes. Let me tell you something. No standing ovation should last as long as it takes for two people to have sex. That's all I'm
right, damn it.
Stop with these fake phony ass 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 minute standing ovations. That's called false hustle. You ain't fooling nobody.
There was one that was 14 minutes, bro.
That's ridiculous. Who's doing that? So you mean to tell me that people can stand up and start clapping? I could go use the bathroom, smoke a cigarette while I have to borrow a cigarette from somebody, then smoke it, come back in, and people are still clapping? Again, that's false hustle. Stop it. These movies are not good. These performances are not that good, for God's sakes. All right? I saw Vince Carter dunk and jam his hand into the rim and hang on it. I was in the building for that. People didn't clap for 14 minutes. And Vince Carter at the 2000 NBA dunk contest, that is way cooler than somebody impersonating Marilyn Monroe. Stop it.
Yeah, I ain't standing at that low. As a matter of fact, if I'm standing that low, that means somebody got me a check. Otherwise, you ain't getting me to stand that low and clap for you.
For $350,000, I'll stand up and clap as long as you want me to. All right?
I'll stand and clap then. Yes. Then I will stand and clap. Actually, you know what? There have been times where I've been at concerts and I probably stood and I clapped for a couple of minutes because I knew I was going to get an encore. Like, that was for a specific reason.
Yeah, but
so I'll do it then.
But after a while, I find the encore thing so silly. Although I get it. If you listen to bands, they tell you that's just our chance to go use the bathroom. I've been to God knows how many concerts, who knows how many encores, and I'll give it to you for a little bit. But like I said, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. After that, I'm like, I feel kind of silly doing this. Yeah. Right? I'm just going to stop. You're coming back out anyway, whether I clap
Hey, the worst ones is when they stand and they clap for 5 minutes and they don't come back out and the lights come on.
Yeah, then you feel like a fool. They're halfway back to the hotel and your dumb ass still standing there.
Still clapping. That's so funny. I have one that bugged me last week. We talked about Queen Elizabeth's death, but God damn, it was on TV every single day, all day long. I'm like, she is not our queen. I don't want to be an asshole, but she is like nothing to this country. Sorry, nothing. Fine, recognize her as a statesperson, recognize her service, but then let's keep it moving. There's other shit in the news. But the all-day coverage for 5 days straight, following her casket, asking stupid questions about what does the queen's reign mean to you, like random ass people on the street, No one cares. No one cares.
Wait, they were asking Americans. And nobody said, not a goddamn thing. Leave me alone with this nonsense. Did people actually answer that question earnestly?
I'm sure they did. Of course they did. You know why? You did it because the camera was on them.
Absolutely.
And the camera was on them, and everybody wanted to sound like, you know, they were smart and they were informed and they gave a damn and they were worldly. Like, most of us don't.
Man, let me tell you something. Glad they didn't put that camera in front of my face because I'd have went full public enemy on them. Motherfuck her and Prince Charles. All right? Or King, whatever. King throw, whatever. Whatever.
Doesn't mean anything.
I made my feelings about the British monarchy known in last week's episode. So, you know, go back and peep that if you want to know how I feel. But yeah, first off, is that old lady in the ground yet, or are they still parading her around London?
Bro, they just put her in the ground yesterday.
Man, I bet she stunk.
So, she was not minty fresh. I can tell you that.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Jesus, man. Well, listen, here's why we spend so much time on it. Because the media in this country is broken, and it has been broken for a while. And we in this country, media-wise, focus more on celebrity than we do on actual news and actual things of import and substance. That's how we ended up with that asshole for president over the last 4 years, because we are so focused on celebrity. So it does not, I didn't pay any attention to the coverage because I don't even bother with CNN. I don't even bother with any of this stuff anymore because it's just so mind numbing. But they follow bright, shiny objects, and the British royal family is a bright, shiny object to them and a lot of people in this country. So that's why they focused on it. And I forget the actual tweet, but, you know, somebody said, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's a damn shame that there's more coverage given to, you know, King Charles making his speech, as his first speech as King of England. And the three major networks, or four major networks, all carried King Charles's speech live, but none of them carried President Biden's speech about the threat that right-wing extremism poses to American democracy. None of the four major networks carried that speech live. That tells you how broken media is in this country, because without a shadow of a doubt, President Biden's speech is significantly more important to Americans than the speech of a monarch who has zero power in his own country, let alone the United States of America.
Yeah, man, it's you bring up a really good point about how, and I'm not one of these blame the media guys. I typically believe, like, yeah, people are getting what they want. And this is actually a very good example of that. So when I was coming out of school in journalism, they teach you, one of the things we talk about was the history of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that people don't talk about anymore is how the press and the news in general used to have a much more prominent place in society, in that the networks literally did not care about turning a profit with the news departments,
right?
Because the news was not a for-profit arm. Yep. It was specifically designed to inform the people.
Yes.
Once, and this is like right around the time I was getting my first job. So we're talking about like 91, 92. Mm-hmm. Right around that time, Fox News was launched, and they turned news into a for-profit operation.
Yep.
And from that point on, everything changed.
And another thing happened as well.
Everything changed.
Deregulation, media deregulation happened. So that's how Fox was able to gain the foothold it eventually gained. And, you know, it started a little bit before that as well, where you had the entertainment arm of, let's take ABC as an example. You had the entertainment arm of ABC, in essence, merged with the news arm of ABC. And what happened
is that
entertainment took over. So now you had these far-flung foreign bureaus, which cost a lot of money, but they served a very important purpose. Now, because they were not money makers, they were shuttered. And then you just had more focus placed on what celebrities are doing, or just, you know, just giving us the cotton candy version of news. Yep. Nothing of substance, nothing of import, nothing that's good for us. It's all just stuff that's just fluff. So when you had when you had corporations take over ABC, CBS, NBC at the time, when you just had three, they de-emphasized news, emphasized entertainment. Entertainment took over. Yep. Then you had media deregulation in the early 90s. You get Fox that comes along. I'm simplifying it here. Fast forward to where we are right now, and you get what we get right now, which is nothing of substance unless it is big and shiny, like a presidential
you have election, to look for
or like a tragedy or something along those lines.
Yeah, and it says, I mean, it probably says more about our population than it does about the industry itself, because the idea of generating revenue and making money and turning a profit, they're going to give you what you like. They're going to give you what you watch. And it's very clear, very evident that you can make more money and sell more ads because you're going to get more eyeballs with people paying attention to the wedding of a royal than they would paying attention to a very important speech or State of the Union address from the United States president. Yeah. That's just, I've become more and more alarmed at the apathy of our population. Hey, did you check out the State of the Union address last night? Oh, no, man, I ain't watched that shit. But then did you guys check out the wedding of Meghan Markle and Harry? Oh my God, her dress is so pretty, blah, blah, blah. Like, wow, so you didn't pay attention to the important shit, but you decided to watch this other thing.
Yeah.
When you're trying to make money, you're kind of forced, you're kind of pushed in a position where you have to give people what they want. Yeah. I wish we could go back to that era. I'm sounding like an old man. I wish we could go back, but it was just, I think it was healthier when the news was just the news without any sort of need or desire or, you know, idea that we had to make money off of it.
We're never going back. We're never going back. You can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. We can hope to better educate this populace. But as far as, listen, capitalism never reverses. It keeps going on and on and on and on. And you're not going to have these entertainment companies, which are now, they're consolidating, you know, Paramount is thinking about getting rid of Showtime, the cable channel Showtime, and just taking all of the Showtime programming and putting it on Paramount Plus. Like, they're shrinking. They are downsizing right now because they want to make more money. So they're never going to look back and go, you know what? Maybe we should just go back to the days where news costs money. We're not trying to make money off of it. No, let me tell you something, man. Corporations don't give money back. Never.
That's right.
Absolutely not. They only exist to make more money for their shareholders. Let's get to the randomness before we get to the deuce. What you got?
Well, so, you know, I do this thing periodically because I have a lot of time on my hands. And I just got into a conversation with one of my cousin's friends the other night. And the conversation came around to relationships and breakups. And so it got me to thinking about, obviously, we all hope to learn things from every experience. But I'll pose this question to you. In terms of your life, over the course of your life, the big breakups you've had, do you think you've learned more from those big breakups, or do you think you've learned more from seeing people whose relationships have stood the test of time?
Oh, no. I mean, as a child of divorce, I've learned more from breakups. I've learned more what not to do than what to do. And this goes, you know, in my own life as well. I think the important thing is that if you got to be real about it, you got to keep it funky. You got to make sure you learn about yourself. You know, why did it end? Was it because of you? Did you have something to do with it? You know, I pat myself on the back here. I would like to think that, you know, my last big breakup, I would like to think that I learned that it was me too. The breakup had to happen, But you know, I wasn't blameless in the situation at all. Absolutely.
No one ever is.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, it depends on who you ask.
I think if we're all being honest with ourselves, and I think that's the toughest thing about breakups, is being honest and being really, truly reflective and introspective and figuring out what part did I play in this. Because it's very, particularly when you're younger, it's very easy to go, it's all that person's fault.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But I just feel like, yeah, I think I would like to say that I agree with you that I probably learned more from those big breakups, particularly the ones that were really painful. But gosh, I feel like I also learned some stuff from the ones that I've seen last a long time too. Mm-hmm. I heard the great advice, simple ass advice that I got, and I still use it to this day because it sort of simplifies everything. But when I got married, my mom said to me, take care of each other. And it really doesn't get any simpler than that. And obviously that is a very simple statement, but it kind of incorporates all really the most important component of any lasting relationship, taking care of each other.
Yep.
Making sure that person's needs are being met. And then that person's also doing the same thing for you. Those, it's like something very easy to say, but it's very easy to get wrapped up into your own shit and not think about that. Or especially in the heat of the battle, if you have an argument with somebody, you go, fuck it then.
Yeah.
And not take on the responsibility that you have. The communication thing you and I, we talk about frequently on the show, is being better at communicating. Part of being better at communicating is being able to listen and understand the part that you may have played in something going awry.
Oh man. I mean, that's real spill right there. Let's get into the juice. That's where we take a topic, squeeze all of the goodness out of it. And boy, this week, this is particularly infuriating, my man.
You are right, Rod. I saw this story, and this has kind of been building up for a long time with me. And especially over the last few weeks, if we've talked about certain things that have gone on, but Brett Favre, obviously one of the greatest players in the history of the National Football League, we find out that this dude has been taking money from one of the poorest states in the union.
The
Might
poorest.
Be the poorest state in the union.
The poorest.
Yeah. Poorest yes. state in the union. And taking money from welfare, money that's meant to go to underprivileged children and parents and families. And
black people.
Using it for himself to get his kids' college and his own college alma mater, a volleyball, a gym. And what the fuck is going on with this guy? But literally taking money from them. And this is just a sort of another drip in the big ass water bucket that is the South when it comes to the way things are run out there. Because a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the water problems in Mississippi. But all these things happen in the South. If this is going to happen, this is going to happen in the South. And Brett Favre knew he was in the wrong. He was even talking about how, I don't want the media to find out. How can they find out? Will they? Blah, blah, blah. But my question here is, and it's one that we're going to be asking forever, but are Southern white people, are they so willing to continue to put themselves, their own happiness, their own lifestyle, their own quality of life at risk year after year after year by voting in some of the worst and most corrupt and vile human beings to lead their states simply because they think that they're keeping black folks from getting shit?
Yes. Yes.
That's really what I want to know.
They want to keep the racist power structure in place and forever in Mississippi and Alabama, South Carolina, Georgia, you know, Arkansas, Texas, white people have benefited from being in charge, in certain cases being above the law, and they want to keep it that way because that's all they can cling to. You know, the white people are outnumbered in Mississippi. If you're just talking about population, you know, there are more black people than white people in Mississippi. And strangely enough, the black people are all poor. Well, if that dynamic shifted, and not just a total shift where all of a sudden the black people were in power and they were moneyed and all the white people were poor, if it just shifted a little bit, the minority, the white people, they're in trouble. They're in absolute trouble. And they know that the day that that happens is the day it is all over with. So it is important to them to keep that racist power structure, that racist power dynamic that I just described in place. And because it is in place, and because it has been in place for years, and it is just so embedded in the fabric of, in this case, Mississippi, they know that they can get away with shit like this. And make no mistake about it, Brett Favre is going to get away with this. He ain't going to see no jail time. Probably is not going to have to pay back the $6 million he stole from poor black people in Mississippi, as you detail, Marcus, to pay for a volleyball center on the campus of the University of Southern Mississippi, where Brett Favre went to school, pardon me, where he attended school, if he even attended. He just played football there, really. This man has made millions of dollars over the course of his career, is worth well over $100 million. But because of the racist power structure that is in full effect in Mississippi, he felt compelled to just go ahead and just stick his piggy nose into that trough because he didn't think he was going to get caught. He didn't think anything was going to happen to him.
Yep.
And he's right. And nothing is going to happen to him. And it's infuriating. It makes me sad to a certain extent because still Jackson, Mississippi, the capital of Mississippi, that is 80% black, still does not have clean drinking or bathing water at the ready, which is a basic human right, damn sure a basic American right, since we are the United States of America. But all of a sudden, they can't fix it. Where are we going to get the money from? Well, God damn it, I know Brett Favre got $6 million of it. Why don't you go knock on his door so we could get this stuff? That's just the way it is down there. And is it going to change? You know, Georgia is changing. Texas is changing. You know, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina. I mean, those places are just so goddamn special. And I don't mean in a good way that's going to take a little bit more time. But people are seeing what's going on. And I don't know. This is just probably just a naive hope on my part. But you can't keep getting away with this shit for longer. And just a special fuck you to Brett Favre, who has been a scumbag in plain sight. And people like me just didn't pay attention. And I hate the fact. I hate the coolest thing I've ever seen in sports. The absolute coolest thing I've ever seen in sports is Monday Night Football, Oakland Raiders versus the Green Bay Packers. And it's the day after Brett Favre's father died. And Brett Favre threw for 399 yards and 4 touchdowns in the first half of that game. And I was the sideline reporter for the Raiders back then. So I was on the field as it happened. And let me tell you something, man. I know that wasn't a highly motivated Raiders team at the time, but I saw Brett Favre dropping footballs out of the sky from a great distance. It remains to this day. And I saw Vince Carter dunk. I've seen Steph Curry. I saw the dunk contest for Vince Carter. I've seen Steph Curry play. I've seen a bunch of cool shit. What Brett Favre did that night was the football equivalent of walking on water. It really pisses me off that I rooted for that asshole. Really. Mm-hmm. Because that's the kind of guy you are. And he didn't just become that guy. He's always been that guy. And like I said, he was always that guy in plain sight. And I didn't notice. This is the same dude that sent a picture of his tiny little dick to a woman back in the day. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, his politics are on full display. He's a gross, disgusting human being. And he did what gross, disgusting human beings do. He stole from poor people that I'm sure he feels he is morally superior to. So fuck you forever, Brett Favre. I hope you get your legs broken.
And you pointed out really the most important part of that. He is a guy who stole from poor folks and feels like he's morally superior to them. Yeah. That is the most important part of this story because he's the guy who's going to say, And a lot of people out there are saying these folks should pick themselves up. Why are you poor? If you tried harder, you wouldn't be poor.
These look same at me.
People who were, yeah. Look at me. So you got these people who are saying, well, why don't the people in Jackson? Why don't they just fix their water?
It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Well, you're taking all the money from every single thing they want to do, and you're giving it to Brett Favre. That's why we can't get the water system repaired. That's why we can't have nice things, because you keep stealing our shit.
When Katrina happened, and you had people going, well, they knew the hurricane was coming. Why didn't they just leave? Because, you rotten motherfucker, poor people just can't get in their non-existent car with their non-existent money and put gas in their non-existent car and flee 400 miles north and stay at a hotel or a motel for an undetermined amount of time. You rotten bastard. Like, oh, it drives me insane when people do that.
There is this weird thing about being poor in this country. It disgusts me how poor people are treated. As if they want it that way.
Right. Yeah.
The correlation is, if you're poor, then you must be dumb and lazy.
Right.
And if you're rich, you're somehow superior. And time and time again, you and I know this. We've seen people with a bunch of money, and we've seen them be pieces of shit. I can tell you some stories, I'm sure you can too, about some athletes I've seen in some clubs. I'm telling you, a lot of these rich people could be pieces of shit.
I can tell you stories about owners, about NFL owners.
Oh,
and
you didn't even get to that guy.
NBA owners.
Robin Sarver.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, but I can tell you stuff I've seen. I can tell you stuff I know from firsthand, mm-hmm. or got it on good authority, mm-hmm. from very trustworthy sources. So I'm not,
yes, sir.
You know, athletes, that's fine. You know, it's that old joke. You know, Shaq is rich. Oprah is, Bill Gates is wealthy. Athletes are rich. The owners, that's generational wealth.
What did Chris Rock say?
Yeah,
what did Chris Rock say? Oprah is wealthy, but if Bill Gates had Oprah's money, he'd throw himself out the window.
Kill himself. Exactly. I can tell you some shit that I know about owners, but they get to get away with it because, and what is crazy in this country is we have this idea that just because you're rich, you're smart. There's a lot of dumb rich people out there. And strangely enough, many of them own NFL teams. It is a weird dynamic. I always wonder, how do we as citizens of cities around the country, how do we keep losing the NFL owners? Because these are some of the dumbest people walking the planet.
You want to see the epitome of how America feels about rich people is Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
If Donald Trump was a plumber, we would think Donald Trump was a fucking, well, we do think that. But if Donald Trump was a plumber, he's just a middle-class dude, everybody on the planet would be going, oh, why are we listening to this dude? He's a nobody. But since he's allegedly a billionaire, all these poor people, these poor white folks run around thinking, oh, he's one of us. He really worked hard. He's really smart because he's a billionaire. I'm like, you motherfuckers is dumb. Dumb. Well,
that's why we care about the royal family in this country. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of rich people. Mm-hmm. And we just look at them and go, mm-hmm. they got it made. They got it all figured out. Like,
do you know
the history of inbreeding of the British royal family? Come on, man. Take a good look at Charles. He's not a handsome guy. That is centuries upon centuries of cousins fucking. That's what that is. And that's your king? That's who you bow
down? That's your king?
Okay. Whatever.
Oh, man. I hope, just to wrap that up, I am certainly hoping that things change in the South at some point. And I actually think that, on the other hand, I am really hoping that Black folks out here wake up and go, we tired of this shit and we're going to hit these polls in droves. Because I guarantee you that's the only way to get these clowns out of here is by our folks getting out there and packing those polls and getting these other jokers voted the fuck out.
old girl Stacey Abrams, who has a real chance of becoming governor of Georgia. If she gets that done, and if Raphael Warnock beats Herschel Walker, who we'll get into that asshole in a future episode, if he beats him and retains that Senate seat, I think Georgia is going to be a real good example for, you know, for Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama. Mississippi might be too far gone at this point, but I think for Georgia,
Kentucky,
for Alabama, Kentucky, absolutely. And Louisiana, and I put Texas in a special category because, well, Texas. I think if Stacey Abrams pulls this thing off and becomes the governor of Georgia, I think that might be the spark that lights the fuse. I hope so. I'm more hopeful than anything else.
Preach it, bro.
All right, my brother. That is another episode of Quality Hang, not just the name of the podcast, as you just heard. It is a quality hang. I mean, we just get here. We just, you know, we laugh, we riff, we share, we cajole, we scream. we do everything, but mainly we have a lot of fun. Make sure you follow us on all the socials at Quality Hang. Or at Quality Hang Pod on Twitter. We're also on TikTok, Instagram. And am I forgetting anything? Is there something new that has come out that I don't know about?
Not yet, but give it time. I'm sure there'll be something.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some wise ass at Stanford that's coming up with something that's going to change the world and not for the better. My man, have yourself a great week. I'll talk to you, my brother. Be well.
Be safe, bro.
All right, man. Everybody out there, be good or be good at it. We'll holler at you. Peace.